Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to be here to discuss copyright. My name is Barry Coburn. I'm the co-president of a music publishing company, 1010 Music Group, which we formed 26 years ago in Nashville, Tennessee. Our company controls about 12,000 songs and has 20 songs that have been performed over a million times. We operate our company on a business model where we pay so weekly or monthly advances to songwriters to allow them to work and develop music, and I guess it's a nurturing style of business. And we've funded many songwriters that have gone on from ground zero to become major names, Alan Jackson, Keith Urban, etc. We then hope that we can generate activity from those copyrights and return the monies and recover the monies that we have advanced them. But our ability to provide that nurturing and support for new songwriters has been severely reduced by the changes that have taken place in the music business. We're living in an era where free is decimating the music industry and is starting to do the same for film, television and books. Yet for the world's internet service providers, bloated by years of broadband growth, free music has been a multi-million dollar bonanza. I can only hope that your study will move towards putting it right. What is the underlying constitutional purpose of copyright law? I mean, patent law promotes innovation. Copyright law promotes creativity and authorship. The digital era has brought to the world changes of staggering proportions. Transmissions at the speed of light, technologies of perfect copying, user empowerment, globalization, authors can market works directly to the public. Various elements of the copyright law are showing stresses and strains. The safe harbors in the DMCA are broken. Recent judicial decisions have distorted copyright law regarding subscription streaming and download and a download performance loophole. We cannot defend ourselves as music publishers and creators. Record companies can refuse to license music. We can't. My perspective as a music publisher, I've worked daily in this business for 40 years, and I'm here to speak on behalf of all of the members of ASCAP and BMI, which is close to a million members, most of who are small business people. Copyrights are a major form of American commerce that I think has to be protected. Copyrights protect cultural expression. The United States is part of a global economy. We cannot afford to undervalue downloads, performances, transmissions on the internet. Music is the most popular commodity on the internet, and Anglo-American music is the most popular in the world. It all begins with a song. Technology and copyright are not inherent adversaries. Technology improves the access of quality of music works. Copyright policy reflects technological changes that have occurred throughout history. The US copyright system has survived and fostered a dramatic evolution in how content is transmitted and received. Copyright law defines a public performance as a transmission to the public whereby images or sounds are received beyond the place from which they are sent. The internet and personal computers represent the same functionality of transmission and reception as the broadcast model. With experience in the valuation and tracking of music use, PROs like BMI and ASCAP are well suited to play an important role in the internet rights clearance to the continuing benefit of songwriters, composers, and music publishers. The balance between users and creators in the copyright system has shifted dramatically over the past two decades. But contrary to the assertions of the copyright critics, the balance has shifted against copyright creators, not in their favour. Digital technology enables use of copyrighted works never before contemplated, with ease never before experienced. In volumes previously unimagined, people are making more uses, fair and otherwise, of copyrighted works than ever before. At the same time, digital technology has significantly reduced the practical ability of rights holders to control the use of their works. In short, today's users can do far more with copyrighted works than ever before, and today's rights holders have far less control. For the nearly 1 million members of the American songwriter community, digital technology, and in particular the rise of internet as a music distribution and listening medium, currently poses more of a challenge than an opportunity. While a staggering volume of copyrighted music is being distributed, copied, and streamed through the internet, the creators of that music, America's songwriters, receive very little compensation from it. Digital piracy is not the only reason American songwriters do not receive commensurate benefit from the internet uses of their works. Songwriters are also being denied their fair share by internet services that take advantage of the unique legal structure surrounding the licensing of musical performances. Unlike all other copyright holders, songwriters cannot demand that services negotiate with them prior to performing their works. Because of the consent decree administered by the federal courts, under which the songwriters performing rights organisations operate, songwriters are required to license anyone and who requests a license. The court then is supposed to determine the appropriate rate, which has caused the PROs to spend millions of dollars in legal fees to enforce their members' rights. No other business has to work this way. This will have to change. For over a century, performance royalties have comprised a key part of American songwriters' livelihoods. As new technologies emerged from radio to broadcast TV, cable and satellite, the rate court recognised the significant contribution musical performances made to the success of new technologies and established performance rights at an appropriate rate. However, there is growing evidence that songwriters may not appropriately benefit from performances of their music on the internet. Many internet services are fly-by-night operations, poorly capitalised with little or no revenue, and risky at best business models. By the time the rate court sets appropriate royalty rates, which in some cases have taken years, many of these operations will have shuttered their servers without paying songwriters a penny. These services are paid upfront for rent, employee salaries, broadband access, computer equipment, etc. And why should only America's songwriters be required to provide their services for free? Those internet services that do have significant revenue have demonstrated exceptional, if underhanded, ingenuity by designing their services and legal arguments to minimise performance royalties. For example, some services place advertisements on separate pages from the musical performances their users want, while others design their systems so a user, rather than the service itself, initiates the performance, all in an effort to escape performance royalties. To date, internet services provide only a tiny percentage of performance royalties earned by songwriters. If this story continues, even as the internet becomes the predominant medium for musical performances, America's professional songwriters, the source of the great American songbook, will be turned into part-time hobbyists. Surely this result does not benefit American culture, the economy, or internet innovation itself. Nashville 12 years ago had 4,000 songwriters who were making a decent living. I have researched and talked to the PROs and talked to the other publishers in town. There are currently 200 making a living at a reasonable level. There's Hall of Fame songwriters who can't even make their payments now on mortgages or rent. The ISPs are in the content delivery business. They should not devalue music. They should join with the music industry to create value for the content they are distributing. And I believe that can be achieved. I was on a panel on copyright 3 weeks ago with the Secretary of Commerce, Gary Locke, who visited Nashville to talk with us. And the governor of Tennessee, Phil Bredesen, questioned on that panel, why do we call this internet piracy? Why don't we just call it internet theft? He said, piracy makes me think of Jack Sparrow. Makes me think that it's all sort of okay. There's a bit of a humor about it. He said, it's just plain theft, and it's affecting American commerce. It's affecting our tax base. It's affecting everything. And certainly within the audience of about 500 people, it was affecting most of their livelihoods. The users argue that they don't earn any money. I have a young rock songwriter that I've been supporting for 4 years. Her name is Elena Beaton. We've had 10 million plays on MySpace on her. And so far I've received $38.76. It's not a sustainable business model. Music is being used as a loss leader to attract people to internet sites with no payment. The building blocks of MySpace and YouTube and other services have been provided by the songwriters of this country. I think it is an economic necessity for the US intellectual property to create a new structure to pay our creators. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Barry. Members of the committee?
Yeah. So you provided this interesting statistic that, I guess, a decade ago, there were 4,000 songwriters who were earning professional level incomes, and now we're down to 200 in national. And I guess one of the things that would be very useful for us is to know how you come to those numbers and to provide, the background for us to really be able to verify the source.
Okay. Well, that number came from the National Songwriters Association, who monitor the number, most of the members of the songwriting community are members there. They looked at it in terms of people who are earning, I think they set the number at $50,000 in income as to what people are earning, based on what it used to be and what they see it as now. EMI Music Publishing, which is one of the largest ones, had 260 songwriters 5 years ago, and they currently have 38 contracted that they're paying. Most of the major publishing companies, Sony ATV had 198, and they tell me they're down to about 48. So the reductions are enormous in terms of what they're paying, and this is a really important part, I believe, of the nurturing. I mean, most of the songwriters, in the case of Keith Urban, who you may or may not be familiar with, we signed him, we supported him for 6 years before we got a dollar back. We were $280,000 unrecouped at that point when we started to get the money back, and certainly he went on and sold 13 million albums, and we got our money back, but it was a long process to develop him. And most songwriters that we sign, I mean, we currently have a number of songwriters that we're nurturing. It's really, I guess, not dissimilar to the way Van Gogh and other creators were assisted by people. Many didn't see the benefits in their lifetime. I'd like to believe that songwriters can be developed and nurtured by the activities of companies such as ourselves. The major companies have certainly stepped back significantly from providing those services because they just cannot see the revenue streams to justify it.
Oh. 10 years in to this this sort of digital challenge and thinking about how to help us craft a research agenda, would you expect and have you seen an actual reduction in the quantity of quality songs?
Well, we're certainly seeing, yes, I think there's an absolute resounding yes. I mean, I think that the problem you've got is that there is a tendency to try and go for the absolute sort of commercial mainstream. You know, when you're under pressure from a publishing company standpoint, and therefore you're unlikely to perhaps sign and help nurture those artists that perhaps come from the edge, the Bob Dylans and the Kris Kristofferson's, and that quality of writer do not get the assistance and support that they once got.
But what would we look at as data? Where would we see this? Might we see this in a drop-off in the number of albums or songs that get reviewed well by, forward-thinking reviewers? How would we see this, in a research sense?
I think from a research standpoint, it's a good question. Unfortunately, I don't think you can quantify it in terms of how you would quantify the quality of music. It's such a personal thing. Obviously, with digital technology, we're seeing a very large number of records or music, going up on the web. As to what you'd regard as quality, it's such a personal thing. I'm not sure that you can quantify it.
Could you clarify what was the main source of performance royalties that you used to get that allowed you to support more songwriters? I understand that you don't get what you think would be optimal from various internet delivery services, but is the shortfall that you're also not getting what you used to get from radio play, or what?
Well, radio play has is obviously rolling off now because of the economics of radio, with the fees that are being collected by the PROs being reduced by advertising revenues during this time. Overall, mechanical royalties for sales are certainly, you know, a major challenge for us because, of course, you can't compete with free. So we believe, and we've tracked it with various entities. I mean, we could look at a Keith Urban copyright and see that we're basically being paid for 1 in 20 downloads. I mean, most copyrights can be watermarked or tracked, and we know, based on Big Champagne and other entities that are tracking it, they tell me that at the very best we will get paid for 1 in 20. In terms of the royalties, in terms of performances, certainly broadcast and television royalties are reducing because of the revenue streams that the payments they make to PROs are based on that. But the facts remain that the American songwriters are providing those building blocks to build these structures. You know, MySpace, we get, I mean, minimal at the very best. Facebook has not paid a dollar to anybody for any use of music so far. And so these services are not providing anything, and they're building it on the backs of the American songwriter, in my mind.
Mr. Rosenthal, this is Chris Sprigman. I just wanted to ask you about what you just said. You think from Big Champagne you're about 1 in 20 in terms of downloads that you get paid for. Do you have any data, or do you know where we might get any data regarding how many of, say, the 19 downloads out of 20 that you don't get paid for would have happened if they weren't essentially free? I'm just curious as to what we can find out about that.
Well, all I know is I serve on the board of the Country Music Association, and we have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars recently in doing market research with large audiences, and this is the best answer I can give you. What we ascertained from that research, and we went out three different times. We went out the first time, then we focused more on what we could discover, and what we learned was that there wasn't a resistance to paying. I mean, my challenge is that if you go to Google and log in any major song right now, the first thing you're going to get is you'll get iTunes at the top giving you access to it, and then you're going to get BitTorrent and hundreds of other sites. And then Google will take you to those sites with advertising on the side of it. We don't participate in that. And then you'll get to those sites and you can download it for free. So it's impossible to compete with that. In terms of whether people will pay for it, our CMA research showed that they absolutely would, and there was a sort of a magic number. As long as it was less than a dollar, there was very little resistance to paying that. I think there was certainly a point when, from our research, that when iTunes put their price up over a dollar, there was resistance. But from our research, they were willing to pay, but they were frequently led, and just the task, especially for newer users, which are mainly the people that are older as they come into this world, they're confused, they don't know the difference, and they can easily access music for free.
Great, thank you.